Welcome back, everyone, to the XCast. As ever, the truth is in here. I'm your host today, Carl Sweeney, and thank you for joining us for the third day of our coverage of the eighth episode of Season 11, which is called Familiar. And Andrew Blake is back with me. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Carl.
We're going to talk today, I think, about two, you know, interesting people, I think, because it's a rarity, first of all, to get a female-directed X-Files episode. We had one just a couple of episodes ago with Carol Banker-directed Kitten. But Holly Dale directed this one, and she's only the fourth woman to have directed an episode. So, I mean, that's noteworthy in and of itself.
Sure.
And we've also got a first-time writer on the series, Benjamin Van Allen. And, again, I mean, with first-time writers, we can't go back and look at their past episodes, obviously, to see what they, you know, their favourite themes are or what they kind of like to explore. But, yeah, so it brings, you know, it'd be an interesting challenge to talk about these two, I think.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm not familiar with either one's work. I mean, I'm aware of the fact that Van Allen was on the show as a writer's assistant, I believe it was. So, but I'm not familiar with either one in terms of their work. I thought both did a fantastic job, and I think it's excellent when you're bringing on fresh meat, so to say, on these episodes, because, you know, I always want to see what new voices will do for the show.
Yeah, totally. And, I mean, let's start with Holly Dale. Like we said, her first X-Files episode, but she's a very prolific director. If you look at her IMDb page, for example, just a long list of directing credits, you know. So someone with a bit of pedigree. And, yeah, what are your general thoughts, really? I mean, she hasn't, as far as I can see, given any interviews yet about this episode. So we can't really check out what she said to work out what she was going for or what she, you know, what specific choices she made. However, we will be hearing from her on the podcast, hopefully, within the next few days. We're hoping to have an interview with her coming very soon. If all goes to plan, it'll be the next podcast people hear, actually. So over to you, Andrew. What did you think? General thoughts on, like, the direction, the visuals and so on? I know we've touched a little bit on this previously.
Well, I think in terms of if you're considering this from the standpoint of kind of the more classic Monster of the Week procedural, I felt like she did an excellent job. I'd be interested to ask her if she had, you know, if she's been a fan of the show a long time, if she went back to study any episodes in particular, or if this was kind of just her own natural sort of response, because either way, I felt like, you know, she just did an excellent job. It really felt like, you know, a more traditional episode of the Monster of the Week, rather. And as a director taking advantage of the scenery in Vancouver, I mean, I felt like this episode did a lot more to that end than more recent episodes we've seen.
Yeah, and I need to go back and look at this episode, really, so I can really pay attention to, like, you know, what the camera's doing and that kind of thing. Because, like, the first time I was just kind of engaged with the story and kind of swept up in it. I think the only element that kind of, it seemed a little jarring on first watch, there's this kind of weird, almost a car chase that happens midway through the episode, isn't there, when they're after the policeman who's tracking the sex offender, isn't he?
Right.
I don't know, did that jump out at you on first viewing at all, or did you just feel it was all of a piece?
I did. I had a friend that was watching it with me on Wednesday night when it premiered, and after that scene he said, well, that was the most uneventful car chase I've ever seen. Because it does seem like there's going to be a lot of build up, and, you know, it was interesting to see. But yeah, it didn't really feel like it kind of led anywhere, so to speak, in terms of advancing the plot of the episode. So I definitely agree with you on that one.
Obviously, it was in the script, so it's not really a criticism of Holly Dale, I don't think. But no, it's going to be really fascinating to hear from her on the podcast and, you know, just get some info on how she got the gig and all that kind of thing, and what her experience on set was like and all sorts. It'll be cool to hear, won't it?
And I really want to hear, too. I saw some sort of story, I'm not sure if it was on Twitter, of when they're doing the autopsy scene with the little boy. You know, he's there. It's him. You can see his face very briefly. I'd be interested to see how they directed that. I saw a story that David Duchovny was kind of trying to keep the boy, you know, entertained. I think I read that they kind of pretended the boy was a zombie or something, so they didn't have to tell a 4-year-old, you know, all right, you're playing dead. We're gonna, you know what I mean. So I'd be interested to see how that sensitivity and everything was handled.
Yeah, and that little boy's on Twitter. I don't know if you knew that. He's been tweeting quite prolifically, actually. But I assume it's run by his parents or somebody, you know. But no, he's been posting some pictures of, you know, him with Chris Carter and that kind of thing. It's quite nice, actually.
He's a very prodigious four-year-old, Carl. That's what it is.
Clearly. All right, so Benjamin Van Allen, then. I mean, we'll talk a bit about him because we've got some quotes to chew on from an interview he's given. So, yeah, he was a staff writer on the series. Oh, he is a staff writer on the series this year. That's the normal credit he gets. And previously a writer's assistant. But this is his first, you know, script credit. And yeah, he spoke to Sci-Fi Wire, sci-fi.com, and on the impetus for the episode, this is what he said. He said, "Kids' TV shows have always really creeped me out. I really just wanted to make a classic X-Files episode. It's a Monster of the Week episode, but not all Monster of the Week episodes actually have a monster. I really wanted to have some recognizable monster for the episode. That's where the Mr. Chuckleteeth guy came in." Yeah, so I mean, we've already alluded to this, but it's interesting to take something ostensibly benign and make it terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, except Mr. Chuckleteeth doesn't really look benign to begin with, does it?
No, he doesn't. No,
he definitely succeeded there. So, you know, Mr. Chuckleteeth, I think he'll be one who ends up on the, you know, if there was an X-Files clip show or, you know, YouTube video, top, you know, whatever, top monsters, he's likely to get a look in just purely because of the aesthetics of it, isn't he?
Yeah, oh, I'd say so, definitely. I you know, like you said, it's just, the show's always been good at that. You know, they've taken things, first thing comes to mind is the doll from Chinga, an innocent antique-looking doll that, you know, you throw in the hokey pokey there, and it's just it's a truly creepy episode, and I feel like it's always been good at taking more, for lack of a better word, innocent, childish things and kind of really amping up the creep factor like they did in this one.
And on what he was after in this episode, he said, you know, "Like the classic X-Files feel, I definitely wanted to set it in a small town. I wanted to start the episode in the town with Mulder and Scully and end the episode in the town with Mulder and Scully. As much as I love all the X-Files lore, I didn't want to see the X-Files office. I didn't want to put Skinner in this episode. I just wanted it to be a very classic, standalone Monster of the Week episode." So he clearly knows the show inside out, doesn't he? You can just tell from, you know, a comment like that.
Yeah, and I'd say to that end, he definitely, you know, succeeded because, I mean, it really is a very by the numbers, and I mean that in the best way possible. It's a very familiar sort of setup that the show has always excelled at.
And I'll tell you a little bit of what this reminds me of. Like, in season two, you get Vince Gilligan's first episode, Soft Light, you know. And I don't think anyone would argue it's Gilligan's best script by any means, but you can tell it's written by somebody who knows the series. You know, there are references to previous episodes in there and that kind of thing. And this feels to me, this Van Allen's script, it sort of feels like, you know, if there had been, or if there were to be a season 12 or 13, he may well be somebody who went on to write even more scripts and they'd get a bit more honed, possibly a bit more original, you know, and basically surpass Familiar. However, I mean, we're most likely, we don't know for sure, but most likely that's not going to come to pass. But that's just kind of what it feels like to me.
Yeah, no, a lot of, it's a cringeworthy word, but a lot of potential, because I do think it was, in terms of the writing, it was in most regards very spot on, and I really enjoyed it.
We haven't spoken quite so much about the aspect of, like, witchcraft. And I know, like, Sarah Blair had some issues with it from the X-Cast. She was doing some live tweeting, and I think she may have pointed some of this out on Twitter. But I think some of the specifics didn't quite line up for her. What Van Allen says was, "I was trying to figure out a way to make the lore behind these characters, how to make them real and how to make them dangerous. I'm really big into research and history. I started going into a lot of research into spirits. I'm from Massachusetts, so I kind of wanted to set it in the New England area. When I was researching spirits, I started reading about familiars, and it all just clicked together. That, and I love witchcraft and magic-type stuff." Yeah, on first viewing, it seemed reasonably successful to me, although I don't have any, you know, specialized knowledge at all on this subject. But what did you make of it?
Yeah, I'm with you. I really don't. I wouldn't be one to consult about the particulars of witchcraft lore or anything like that. But, you know, I think to the casual viewer, I'll say it probably succeeds in terms of, you know, setting up, you know, the elements for their use in the story, you're always going to be able to nitpick, and there's nothing wrong with nitpicking. But I think you kind of have to gauge it in terms of, you know, how much am I able to kind of overlook, you know? I mean, sure, you know, the show may not be perfect in terms of the facts it gets, but, you know, it's going to use the elements to advance the story, whether it's completely accurate or not, you know, I don't know. But I think it set out to kind of, you know, use the elements of witchcraft, like the salt circle and the familiars and everything. And I think it felt right to me. I mean, it felt like, you know, they set out to do what they were going to do. And you're always going to be able to nitpick, always. This is the show that, you know, you can look back and say, you know, okay, well, they got the science wrong here, or they got, you know, particularly what comes to mind is their handling of mental illness in older episodes, you know, which it's a product of the times. You know, you're not going to be cutting edge with that. The show has had criticism in the past over things like the episode The Field Where I Died, in terms of what used to be called multiple personality disorder. You know, there's always going to be those things that to people in the industry, you know, or whatever, you're going to be able to nitpick and in some cases maybe take mild offense to. But I think in terms of focusing on the mainstream, what it's doing,
I think that's a fair point. And I'll tell you what surprised me a little from this interview is that he sort of seems to imply that the link to William that a lot of us have seen in that autopsy scene, for example, he sort of seems to say it was kind of accidental. But I mean, if that was the case, in terms of his intent when he was writing the episode, I think that, you know, the performances absolutely convey kind of the weight of the character's history, don't they, Mulder and Scully? You know, you can see they're sort of thinking about William, or it seems that way, even if they don't talk about him outright.
Sure. Sure, exactly. I did see on someone had tweeted at him or an interview he'd done where the little girl was named Emily. And a lot of people thought, oh, is that a direct nod to Scully's, you know, biological daughter, Emily? And he, based on the response he gave, you know, seemed to not even have remembered that she had a daughter named Emily. Which, to be fair, it's, you know, she's only addressed in 3 or 4 episodes in total. So I think those are, you know, coincidences that mean more to certain fans, and that's okay, because that's what, you know, that's what art, so to speak, can do. You know, you can draw all sorts of different interpretations from it, even if they're not intended that way.
Yeah, and I mean, in the previous podcast, we were talking a bit about mob mentality as it relates to the internet and social media, and like the reason I made that link was because he suggests it in this interview, and here's what he said. So he says, I think what I was playing on with that, and everyone can read into it what they want, is there is kind of a mob mentality on the internet now with every single topic that ever comes up. I'm just as guilty as anyone. You read articles on Twitter and it's like headline culture. You'll retweet stuff without even reading the article. You'll jump onto what anybody else is saying and attack other people without ever looking into fact. Like I said, I'm guilty of it as well, but it's a dangerous direction our culture is headed. It's interesting that he's come out and said this, and it's good to know that that was the intent, you know, that this kind of witchcraft story is kind of the hook for this kind of exploration of some current issues, you know. Whereas, like, in the previous episode, Followers, you had, you know, there was no kind of two ways about it. The self-driving car was representative of a self-driving car. But here, it's, you know what I mean? He's playing in kind of a different playground here, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I mean, I think if you take a statement, you know, we don't have to apply it to, you know, hot topics or current, you know, trends or anything, but it's true. I mean, that's basically the meaning of the internet, mass communication, and mass communication 9 times out of 10 results in mob mentality, good or bad. And I think that it's a very fair point, and we're all guilty of it. We all do it. And I think to see it played out, you know, a mob mentality led to the Salem witch trials back in the 1600s, you know, which this episode kind of inadvertently recognizes. And, you know, it was relevant then, and it's even more relevant now. It's almost easier now because of the internet and the social media tools you have. So I thought it was a real interesting point that he kind of wrote that with that in mind.
I think possibly the final episode of the series could engender some kind of intense reactions depending on how it goes. So let's stay spoiler free on this. I don't know if you know any spoilers, but let's just stay as spoiler-free as we possibly can, even down to the promos and stuff, because I know some people are trying to avoid absolutely everything, which is fair enough.
Right.
But Van Allen, he talks about it a little here. So this is spoiler-free, but he says, I think you're really going to enjoy the penultimate episode. The very last episode, I just got a chance to watch in the mix, and I think it's amazing. I think it's thrilling. I think you're in for a mix of emotions. I mean, that would only really be newsworthy if he said the opposite, to be honest. You know, he kind of...
Yeah.
He sort of would say that, wouldn't he? But it's kind of encouraging to hear nonetheless. And I don't know, let's just imagine you had a complete blank slate going into these last couple of episodes, Andrew. You didn't know anything about what was coming up. What would you want to see in episodes 9 and 10 to kind of satisfy you if this is to be the end of, you know, the X-Files as a whole?
Well, for the finale, I don't know. I really, if this really is the end, what I want above anything else is a good, solid end for Mulder and Scully. I want their relationship, where they are in their lives, to be acknowledged. I would like some degree of closure for the two of them, as well as some of the supporting characters like Skinner and Cigarette Smoking Man, you know, and William, of course. Closure above anything else, I would say. I'm looking forward to it. I'm also a little apprehensive about it just because of how my personal reactions have been to the My Struggle episode so far. And I just hope that Chris Carter wrote with knowing that, you know, there may not be a future for these characters right now, that, you know, give us an end that rewards the fans for being fans for so long and feels like this is really an end for the show as well as the characters, because I think that that's all anyone could hope for, and I hope that that's what we get.
And let's just say, like, hypothetically, that season 12 was like a live prospect, you know, whether with Gillian Anderson or without. I mean, how would you feel about that? Do you think, like, because when I watched Familiar, it's episodes, you know, some of these episodes recently have been making me think, hey, they're kind of, maybe there's some, like, gas left in the tank, you know. But then I sort of think, well, when the series ends, I hope it goes out on a season where we're still craving a little bit more, you know. So I got kind of got mixed feelings, but what do you reckon?
You know, I think a story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I think that, you know, for these characters, I think that they have been through so much, and I think that there has already been so much done in terms of exploring the characters and the mythology that I feel like season 11 needs to be the end, because I think we need to preserve what we have and look back on what we have and enjoy what we have. And, you know, I think for those who have been less than pleased with overall how season 10 and 11 have gone, who have been upset with some seeming, you know, retcons in the mythology and characterization and on and on, I just feel like I would like to just leave the show as it is and enjoy it for what it is. I don't personally see how the show would succeed without both of its leads at this point in the game. That's my view on it, but, you know, the truth of the matter is, if it comes back for a season 12, I will probably watch it just because I'm a fan. I don't think it would be a good idea. That's my view on it.
Cool. Okay, just very quick final thought on Familiar then. Yeah, I was pleased with this episode. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, very good, actually. You know, it, like you say, there's nothing wrong with, I can't remember the phrase you used, like a nuts and bolts episode kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not trying to move Mulder and Scully's character arc along that much. It's comprised of elements that we've seen used before. But it kind of did the job in a very nice, you know, in a very satisfying way, I felt. You know, anything else you have to say on this episode?
Pretty much what I've said all along. You know, nuts and bolts is a good phrase. You know, it's a procedural, it's... You could drop it right in the middle of season 3 or 4 and it would play just fine. And I enjoy those kinds of episodes. I think those are the ones you can return to and enjoy for whatever reasons you do that. And Familiar was another solid entry for the show.
All right, Andrew. Well, thanks very much. Just one bit of business before we go. And yeah, we got a new patron and his name is Malcolm Krang. So I just wanted to say a very big thank you to Malcolm for choosing to support the podcast. And if anyone else is listening and wants to do the same, You can go to patreon.com/thexcast and have a read and decide if you too would like to support us, but entirely up to you. So if all goes to plan and we get this Holly Dale interview in the bag, that'll be the next podcast that you hear. And we've also got the next mailbag episode coming very soon, the next listener feedback episode covering Familiar. And then before you know it, we'll be into episode 9. And yeah, the end of the series is fast approaching. But yeah, in the meantime, in all the usual places on Twitter and Facebook. Until next time, listeners, trust no one.